This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Occasionally.
All right, Sparky, here we are back again with another wonderful episode of Paul and Michael Occasionally Save the World. The first question I have for you is, how is week one of your second season playing fantasy football? You're in two leagues with me now, in my Dynasty League, and then in the league that I guess is our kind of our bench league. Like, we keep people warm in there until we need to move them up to the big leagues.
Oh, man, I left people in tears first week. I did surprisingly good. I actually did better with my team that the Slack League, I guess you'd call it, or what is the name for that? The League of...
The name of the league is Uncanny League of Heroes. This league was originally set up by Dwan. The second year I said I would help him fix some of the settings because it was kind of screwy the first year. And he basically made me do it all. So this year, I set it all up. He's still technically a league manager in the league, too, but
yeah,
I don't even know if he does that.
I annihilated him in that league, and then I get to face up with him in the Valiant Central League this next week, and I'm going to annihilate him there also. That's my
plan.
So
you beat him 134.7 to 96.7. Mm. So I went up against Justin Ehart in both leagues. And in the Slack League, the Benchwarmer League, I put up 195.6 points this week. Killed Justin Ehart.
Yeah, I saw that. That's crazy.
In the other league, he beat me, and I'm so mad because I lost by 7 points. I started the Saints defense against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers without their starting quarterback, with Ryan frickin' Fitzpatrick at quarterback. And the Saints defense got me -9 points and literally lost me the week.
Yeah. Yeah, I got lucky in the Slack League, or League of Distinguished, whatever you said it was. I should know this.
Yeah, it's called Slack League. We still just call it Slack League.
I need to know the name
even though
of it.
We don't even use Slack anymore.
I need to know the name of it. Since
the League of Uncanny Heroes.
I'm going to win it this year, so I should know what I'm champion of. But I got lucky even to spot my running back, Fournette. I think that's how you say his name. He went down with a hamstring injury. Yeah. And I was lucky enough to pick up his backup because apparently the talk is that Yeldon, if Fournette doesn't get to play, I'll be able to. He's supposedly a pretty solid backup with that team. So we'll see. It's exciting. I'm trying to pay more attention to little details this year than I did last year.
Yeah, you're definitely doing good. You're one of a couple of people that are my newbies under my fantasy wing, Garrett being the other one. And it's fun to kind of help you guys along and see you start to take off on your own, because he did the same thing last year. He started off, and just as the year went on, he kept on learning the details and kept on improving his team because he was paying attention. That's the biggest thing with fantasy football is you just got to put a little bit of effort into it every week. And then it's really not that bad.
It's that and paying attention to who's available on the waivers. And
that's the attention. I mean, working the waivers goes further than having a good draft.
Yeah.
I had I'm in a money league with a friend from California. It's her league. She's the only person I actually know. And I got second place last year, and I won it the 2 years before that. But last year, I had a god-awful draft. I busted all but, like, two picks in my draft. Like, I literally changed my entire team except Kirk Cousins at quarterback and Melvin Gordon at running back. My third pick was freaking Terrell Pryor. So that shows you how my draft went. It was awful. Hmm. I got second place because I kept on working the waiver wires all year. Back to the VCP league, though. So not only am I pissed off because of the Saints defense, on top of that, I have Le'Veon Bell, who decided that he doesn't want to do his job and go, you know, play football. And Justin had drafted James Conner, his backup. So he was playing. If Le'Veon shows up, I kill Justin. On top of that, my two running backs I played, Kenyon Drake and Alex Collins, had the weirdest games. Baltimore destroyed, was it Buffalo they played? Destroyed them. And so that game was just weird. Alex Collins ended up not doing a lot. And the Miami game, they played Tennessee. They had a massive delay. So they're sitting there waiting for the game to restart for hours. So the two running backs actually played had screwy circumstances on top of that. But I digress. Let's move on from fantasy football. It's exciting to have week one in the books. That's when it really gets fun, I think, is then you start to see you know, what's there on the waivers and put in that work and see your team change over time. So what shall we talk about? I have a comic book I would like to talk about, if you don't mind me starting.
Yeah,
there.
Start it off. What book are you have you read?
So I've been digging back into getting on my Uncanny X-Men reading. So I started reading a while back at Giant Size number 1, and then, you know, Uncanny 94. I guess it was still actually called X-Men at that time, I believe. It was a little bit after they started calling it Uncanny X-Men. But so that's where I had started. And it's been a while ago. I mean, over a year that I started there, and I've been working my way along. And I kind of stalled up on issue 81 for a while. It takes place right after the Secret Wars event, which I actually tried to read the Secret Wars event, and it's okay, but I don't know. Events aren't really my thing, I guess, especially older events like that. So I just went ahead and plugged on with issue 181. Then after that, I thought it started getting a lot better. I'm currently on issue 188, but 183 is one that really stood out to me. So on the cover of 183, you have Colossus fighting with Juggernaut. But Juggernaut's he's not in his Juggernaut gear. So I've never physically seen this comic, but I mean, I've scrolled past the cover over and over on Marvel Unlimited. And just, it never caught my eye. Yeah. It's not the most eye-catching cover, really, especially just that little, you know, the little image when you're scrolling through. So I didn't really even realize it was Juggernaut. I always like a Juggernaut issue. I just think there's something about Juggernaut that you know that's going to be a good issue, even though he's pretty much one of those behemoths that's always the guy who makes somebody else look good, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just feel like Juggernaut stories are almost always going to be fun. This one was really good because this is right after Secret Wars. And apparently in Secret Wars, and as I said, I haven't read the whole thing. I'm going to try to get through it. But, you know, before that, Colossus and Kitty Pryde had this kind of romance blossoming a little bit, but it wasn't quite recognized because, you know, Kitty, when she first joined the X-Men, she was, I want to say, like 13. And Colossus, it's not like he's old. He's 22 at this point, but he was younger when she first joined. Yeah. So he's older than her, but not significantly, but just at that age, a few years is a big difference, obviously. So apparently, in Secret Wars, he fell in love with some alien from another world or whatever. So he comes back and basically breaks Kitty's heart. So Wolverine's going to kind of put him in his place. So he brings him out on the town to a bar, and Wolverine is planning on basically getting in a fight with him.
Hmm.
And, you know, whooping his butt. Nightcrawler tags along. So they go to this bar, and lo and behold, there is the Juggernaut there in his street clothes, just having a good time. And Wolverine tries to get them to quietly exit the bar because he doesn't want a scrap with Juggernaut.
Yeah.
But Colossus is drunk by this point and does the, you're not telling me when I leave, you know, and he stumbles back into Juggernaut. They get into a massive fight, demolish the bar, and in the end, Colossus gets his butt kicked by a Juggernaut. And that's exactly what Wolverine set out to do. But there were a few things, like, first of all, just the whole fight, the whole scene, everything was just great to read. But I also enjoyed Wolverine and Nightcrawler off to the side, and Wolverine's like, no, we're not going to help him. He has this coming. He needs, you know, like, this is what he needed. And Nightcrawler's like, but what about the poor bar? And Wolverine's like, if their insurance doesn't cover it, I'll pick up the bill. So first of all, right there, I thought that was interesting, because that means Wolverine's sitting on some money.
Yeah.
Which, with what we know about him, like, he could be stockpiling money across his whole life, and he could be rich, but, I mean, he doesn't need to live a wealthy life, so he could be, you know? And then you get to the end of it, and Juggernaut is basically like, he throws a wad of cash at Wolverine. Here's for the bar owner so he could fix his bar, because this is Juggernaut's favorite bar, by the way. Here's for the bar owner, and tell the kid he fought good. So not only was Wolverine willing to pay for it, Juggernaut, who's a, you know, a criminal, yeah, here, I'll pay for the repairs. I absolutely love this issue. As I've been reading through, I had been working on collecting Uncanny X-Men for a while, but this was about a year ago, and I kind of realized that I was getting a little too addicted to collecting, and like I had to take a step back and just say, you know what, my comic enjoyment can't be about spending money on stuff, so I got to stop collecting. So I just liquidated stuff. I kept a few issues, but not very much. And now that like things are kind of settled down, I'm not ever going to collect as aggressively as I was last summer when I was finding stuff all over the place and making excuses to spend the money. But I'm slowly like allowing myself, I'll get an issue here, an issue there. You know, I got a bunch of issues for a quarter a piece from my LCS because he was having a sale. His dollar bins were quarter bins for the sale, basically. So I grabbed as many Uncanny X-Men issues as I could. And they were mostly like in the 300s. So not quite my favorite era of covers or reading. But as I go through, and there are issues that really, really stand out to me, I'm taking note of them. So those will be the ones that if I want to actually seek one out, I have targets, and it's not targets based on like what are the, you know, the key issues or stuff like that. So this is one of them. 183 is an issue I want to own. Scrolling back a little bit, there was another one. Issue 166 stood out to me. That's the first introduction of Kitty Pryde's dragon, Lockheed. So that's one that I just really, really enjoyed reading that issue. So that's one that I want to own. So that's kind of how I'm pursuing Uncanny X-Men a little bit right now. I'm still reading it. I have Marvel Unlimited, I think, through the spring about. So I really want to get through Chris Claremont's run, which is a lot to do. But I would like to get through Chris Claremont's run before my subscription ends, because I won't keep it going. I'll do Marvel Unlimited for like a year and then give it a break for a while, and then I might do it again. This is the second time I've done a year subscription to it. So I'd like to plug through all that and then just kind of keep my eye out for picking up issues here and there. But yeah, that's what stood out to me reading-wise this week. Uncanny X-Men number 183.
That sounds like a good policy, especially when like you do a service like that. You want to get as much out of it as you can. And last time we talked, it was before the release of a comic called Border Town, and I picked it up. I haven't got a chance to read it, and I just wondered, what was your follow-up on that? Because you were talking about before it came out.
Oh, yeah. So I talked about... Maybe I haven't talked about that. You know what? I did talk about it. I talked about it some with Alex, which... We release this, it'll be last week's episode. So anybody listening to this, like, you heard me talk about it some with Alex, but I absolutely loved that comic book. I think it's something that's great. And as long, you know, one problem with comic books that can start off great like that is sometimes when the concept is new, it's great, but then after you have it for a little bit, it either gets old or it gets tedious, or they really don't continue to take it somewhere great. So yeah, it really depends on what they continue to do with this. But this is like the structure of something that could be utterly fantastic on so many levels. I followed all three of the creators on Twitter. So I was already following Ramon. Let me pull up the names. I don't want to get their names wrong.
Ramon Villalobos?
Yeah, Villalobos.
Esquivel.
Yes, I followed Ramon already. I followed Eric. He was actually the last one I followed because for some reason, Tamara, I don't know how you say that name. Tamara, we'll go Tamara. Tamara Bonvillain, she's the colorist. And for some reason, when I first saw her name, I thought she was the writer. So then I realized Eric kept on liking everything that I was tweeting and tagging Ramon in. So then I was like, who is this guy? And I looked like, oh, wait, he's the writer. Okay. So I followed him. But following them and seeing some of the comments that they've made too, I see some more of the layers that are in this comic book that I wouldn't have picked up naturally on my own. Like Ramon and Eric, they both tweeted that they were straight edge. But that I guess the straight edge element had, well, there's like an element of straight edge that is like really racist. It's like an entry level for people to, you know, to people into white power. And, that's something that I never knew. So I wouldn't have even known that, but they put that in there where the Nazi kid in it is, he's a straight edge kid too. That's something I never would have known. And it was interesting because it shows that there's multiple levels to everything. And, one of the things I think Eric said, this is, a big purpose of the book was to show that man-made boundaries don't actually exist. Hmm. You know, so like this book portrays boundaries of borders, race, you know, stuff like the straight edge thing where it's, I'm blanking on the word that I want to use for it, but it's, there are all these different boundaries that we make with stuff, but those boundaries are all just fabricated. They're not real things.
Yeah.
You know, we're all still just people. So there's so much to that book that I absolutely love. I love the art. The coloring is fantastic. And there's the elements there for the story to not only be a good and interesting story, but to be a substantial story and have a lot more meaning to it, you know?
Yeah. I picked a copy up. I got a variant cover by accident. No, I guess it wasn't even an accident. I just was the one I liked. It's the cover.
I like that variant cover.
Jorge Jimenez. It's really creepy looking. I haven't got a chance to read it. I flipped through it. I listened to Martin talk about it. He's kind of spoiled a lot of it on his show. But the colors are great. The art's great. And the subject matter's really awesome. And that message that you just shared that he had tweeted about, I agree with that 100%. So, yeah, I can get behind that. Yeah, and you said that sometimes about how books just keep going on and you lose interest. Sometimes a book just needs to end. So I know everybody likes ongoings, but to me, that happy medium between once the author kind of, you know, they've got the story, they've told the story they want to tell, that's a good point in time to just kind of stop, take a break, and then, you know, let that be like a limited and then come back later on, kind of like Rafer was talking about in his interview with you about like modern fantasy. Modern fantasy's over with like four issues, and maybe if things go well, it'll come back, you know, it'll, that way it doesn't get tired or played out, you know. So yeah, I'm looking.
Yeah,
forward to
you look at. Jeff Lemire has basically done that with Black Hammer. There's kind of always something coming out, but he's telling these different stories, and it's not. There's, you know, even the like the Black Hammer proper title isn't just an ongoing forever. The story keeps on getting told, but it's like telling it in segments instead of just telling it nonstop. You know, you look at something longer like Matt Kent with Mind Management. He knew what his story was, and he told the whole story, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, well, we're getting started, and, oh, we have an ongoing contract for this, so we're just going to keep going and going with it. You know, a lot of stories don't take to that. You're not, you know, it's not episodic. Like, a lot of stories aren't episodic. It's not like watching a sitcom or a TV show where, okay, here's an episode of something that happens, and then here's another episode. There's a different story that happens, but then there's a thread through it. Like, a lot of stories, it's one story of, you know, either, like, shorter size, like, 6 issues, or a bigger size, like, 36 issues. But it's one story, and everything is interwoven, and it's not just a bunch of little episodes strung together. So everything needs to be done in its right way, and there's a lot of things that could be great that get diluted when there's no boundaries set on it. There's not a defined, okay, this is what we're doing, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So, I guess I'll move on to what I've been reading. And, for my birthday, I talked myself into, and my wife helped talk me into it because I couldn't pull the trigger on it. I just couldn't do it. And the only thing that made me pull the trigger on getting this, Amazon Kindle Fire, the 10-inch, was one, you recommending it, and then they had a payment plan so I can pay it out over 5 months. And I got it in, and good Lord, you aren't kidding. You can sit and read a comic book just like it's a, like you're holding one. I mean, I can sit, usually I had adjusted myself to reading the guided view on my smaller Kindle, the 6-inch, and having to turn it on its side so it would fill the screen up and still make it out pretty good. And but, you know, with a different shaped panel, sometimes you have to flip it. Don't have to do that at all with this thing. Hey, Lila, say hi, Paul.
Hi,
Paul.
Hi. Lila's hanging out with me here. But it's a beautiful. It's so awesome. And the colors are a lot more vivid on this one. And one of the first things I downloaded, the other day you mentioned about a Dark Horse sale, specifically about Usagi Yojimbo books going, like the whole omnibuses for $2 each. And I went and grabbed them.
Yeah, wasn't that absurd?
That's a great, great deal. I mean, I have the physical copies, but it's just so convenient when you're out and about. Let's say you have to go pick somebody up at an airport or got a meeting somewhere. It's just nice to be able to not have to worry about lugging it around. You can just open up your Kindle and read it right there. So, yeah, I'm completely hooked on the digital version. But in the Dark Horse sale, I picked up a couple of other things just to try. And the Brian Wood and Mac Chater, I think that's how you say his name, the book Sword Daughter. Did you say you picked that up also?
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but I picked up the first two issues based on other recommendations.
I got the first one, read it, talked a little bit with Martin and Aaron about it, and immediately went and got second and third. And I actually really love this book. It's everything from the art is just so clean and just awesome. And the colors, again, the colors are by, let's see who it is. Jose Villa Rubia. I slaughtered that name, I'm sure. Jose Villa Rubia. And it's just beautiful. The cover on the first issue is by Greg Smallwood. It's just it's an interesting story. I see when I first got it, I thought, well, this is just going to be like a fantasy. Cause you know me, if it's fantasy, I'll jump on it. But this is not, it's a historical action revenge story. And I was looking up on the Dark Horse. The summary of it is about how this band called the 40 Swords came at night one night and murdered an entire village, save for two people, a little infant girl named Elizabeth and her grief-stricken father named Dag. He lived. He kind of went into like a, not coma, but almost like a comatose state for like 10 years, and then he snaps out of it. I don't want to ruin it too much for you, but let's just say the line here, it's a Viking revenge saga inspired by samurai cinema. And if that tagline doesn't grab you, especially after all the discussion we've had about samurais and samurai movies, and mixing
that's
it
literally what grabbed me too.
That's pretty cool. And I got to tell you that the art and the way they lay out the like some fight sequences is really impressive. I'm really looking forward to this. I don't know how long this is supposed to go. It's like we're talking, it says it's an ongoing, but that could mean that it's going to go 12 issues, or it could go 30, or it could go 6. But I'm pretty excited about it. I look forward to seeing what you think about it when you read it. I know Martin and Aaron have loved it. And I'm just like scrolling through it here on my Kindle, and the art is just stunning. And I'm not familiar with that artist, I don't think. I don't know if you are. Mac Chater, I guess is how you'd say his name. The colorist is Lauren Affe, A-F-F-E. And it's just outstanding work. So it was fun when you find a new book like that. And I just did it because of that sale. And it's just exciting when you get onto something new like that.
Yeah, definitely. I look forward to reading it. I have all these different things that I'm kind of dipping my toes into. I signed up for a free trial of Comixology Unlimited, which that's part of the reason that I'm not going to continue on with Marvel Unlimited when it's up, is I want to do Comixology Unlimited for a while, but I don't want to, you know, essentially be paying for two services and diluting the value of it, especially since I know that my capacity for how much I can read at a time is limited. But I did the free trial of Comixology Unlimited because they had this one-day flash sale offer where you could do a free trial but also get a free $5 gift card. So I did that, got a free $5 gift card, and I took advantage of the Dark Horse 50% off sale to get the Paybacks collection by Donnie Cates and Elliot Rahal. And it was $15 was the original price, 50% off was $7.50. And then I had that $5 gift card, so I got it for $2.50. So I have the whole run of the Paybacks, which is an earlier Donnie Cates work. I don't know if it's his earliest or not, but earlier one. So I got that to check out. I downloaded the first volume of Classic G.I. Joe, which is one of the bigger reasons why I wanted Comixology Unlimited right now, is they have like all the Classic G.I. Joe on Unlimited. And I've never read any of it. I've been reading the IDW G.I. Joe, and that makes me want to go back and read the classic stuff, which is funny because it's not like War Comics is exactly my cup of tea, but I also have, I got a bunch of issues of Copra by Michelle Fife, because it's something that I've heard talked about for some time. I've just started the second issue, so I'm not very far in that.
Now, what's I picked that up some about? Of
it's basically like Suicide Squad knockoff.
Okay.
But check out Michel Fife's art and you'll see why I like it. Like, there's something about his art that feels very similar to like Matt Kent's art style to me. And that's what makes me like it. Because, like, Suicide Squad, I could care less about the characters in Suicide Squad. And Copra, story-wise, it's a fine story, but it's like the other elements that makes it more interesting for me. But I'm also still only on the second issue. Man, I've picked up so many freaking things to read. I need to dig out that Sword Daughter. I need to jump that to the top of the pile, though.
Yeah.
But, yeah. This is the joys of having a 10-inch Kindle, though, is it's like literally comic book size, and you can just have all those comics at your fingertips.
Well, you told me that it made a huge difference, but I couldn't envision it. But when I hooked it up or turned it on and powered it up and, you know, put that app on it and started downloading, I was like, it really just shocked the heck out of me how good it is. Yeah, I'm very happy I pulled the trigger on that. So
yeah, it's amazing the difference that it makes. It's you can't realize the difference it makes until you see it that size. Like, I know some people that read digital, they'll read on their computers, but I don't spend time on a computer. I'm not sitting around at a computer. My laptop is kind of a piece of crap anyways, you know, so it's not the fastest thing. So it's not like I can sit there reading comics while doing other stuff. I don't spend time on a computer. So if I'm going to read digital, I have to have a tablet. And like, I had a Kindle 7, and that 3 inches is all the difference in the world. Like, it's the size of reading a comic book, and you just like, you can't say enough how much of a difference that makes. And I am very strongly one that I do not like guided view, because a big element of the art of reading a comic book is in the page layout, and guided view takes away the page layout. You can do it to where you have the full page view either before or after the guided view, which is a good way to get that overall impression, but then be able to read it as you guide through it. But I would much rather have a 10-inch tablet than have to do guided view on anything smaller. Yeah, you know, like I have everything on my phone. I have one of the bigger iPhones, so it's a pretty decent size. And at work, like, I'll sit there and do nothing on a break instead of trying to read a comic on my phone, because I just don't like it. I'd rather read it on my tablet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things on the interview Martin did with Dinesh. Dinesh said something to the effect that he didn't see digital being really sustainable because of the fact that the guided view takes away from the experience of seeing the full page layout. And I get what he's saying, but having it on a larger tablet, that kind of dismisses that, because I'm getting I can get the full page layout and see all of it on that. It's just when you're dealing with, like, we're talking about people on their phones and on like smaller tablets. Yeah, it's harder to get the full impact of that, but I don't know. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I think we're kind of a niche where we can appreciate. I mean, I think everybody can appreciate it, but whether or not you can appreciate different things, like, they're still going to be the thing that you like the best. And, you know, for you and I, like, we can get in tune with using digital on this bigger tablet. Most people, when they have technology, they want to be able to carry it around their pockets. So they don't want a big tablet. They want something small. Or, you know, it's like people either want to go small and portable so they can always have it, or they want to go, like, big and powerful, which doesn't have the mobility usually, or is very expensive if it does have the mobility. So it's kind of an in-between to have a, you know, a simple Kindle that's not the most powerful device. Is, you know, it's limited in some aspects, but it works really well for this in particular. But yeah, I don't think that it's there yet where people are going to convert in droves to getting a bigger device and that satisfy, like, the people that have to read physical for various reasons. Mm-hmm. I think there's a small percentage of them that are going to convert because of, like, you know, because of using a bigger tablet. So I still think that ultimately the medium is never going to go fully digital because there's too many aspects about it that are best viewed in, you know, in a physical format. But
yeah,
you can't beat the price, and that's a big difference for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't want it to go all the way to digital because there's just that part. There is something about the physical experience, you know, just flipping through a book or and going into a comic shop. There's still something that you don't want to lose that part of it. So I'm kind of in the middle ground where I do a lot of digital, but I still also will pick stuff up, especially like Number One. Sometimes I'll be grabbing some Number One books, and if I really like them, I'll go and continue them on, like, if I want to read more on digital when they come on sale, you know. So it's good stuff. So what else do you got on your mind?
Well, we kind of did this impromptu, so I was kind of trying to pull some stuff out of my head quickly. We went real long on our last episode, so we'll probably make this one a little bit shorter, especially since we're taking the risk of doing it in the middle of the day when everybody can suddenly want our attention out of the blue. So yeah. I'll keep my other recommendations a little bit shorter. So music-wise, I always kind of go through phases where I'll discover new stuff, and then phases where I just want to listen to old stuff, and then phases where I just, you know, nothing really interests me. So I was listening to some Sage Francis last night and kind of jumping around to a few specific songs. I had a long, long day at work yesterday. I ended up having to stay for like a 15-hour shift because
those are fun.
Somebody couldn't make it. It was a busy, well, business-wise, it wasn't super duper busy, but there was a lot that had to be done, a lot of chaos that had to be sorted out. So I had a long, tiring day. So when I got home, it was already late-ish, and I still had to unwind for a while. So once, like, everybody else was settled in bed, that's when I was just kind of flipping through a few songs, listening, kind of letting my mind settle down. And I listened to a few Sage Francis songs, and that's when I started to kind of doze off a little bit. And on Spotify, when you get to the end of an album, it'll kick on to, like, the radio for that album, which is, you know, random songs based off of what you're listening to, basically. And one of the songs that came on that I actually ended up listening to a few times just because I liked the kind of place it was put in my mind, I guess, is a song by Atmosphere from the album When Life Gives You Lemons. It's called Yesterday. And it's one of those songs that when you just listen to it, like, the vibe of it and everything is just kind of pleasant, you know, feels kind of light, light, pleasant. Just one of those, you know, if you hear it come on, like, gives you a little bit of a good feeling, you know. But it's a song, and he's talking about somebody. He thought he saw them and all these different things, remembering different things. And then by the end of the song, he kind of unveils that it was his dad that he thought he saw, but his dad passed away. But he saw somebody that made, like, you know, when you lose somebody, like, you'll have those moments where you have that something, oh, was that them? But then you realize they're gone, you know?
Yeah.
But those things will kind of open up your mind to all these memories and reminiscences. That's basically what it was a song about, was like reminiscing about his dad. But in a really positive way, you know, like, there are plenty of songs like this too, that'll get those reminiscences triggered, and it'll be really, really kind of sad and down because it's like focusing more on all the loss. This is focusing kind of on all the, you know, all the those little positive moments. You know, not even anything huge, just all those little moments that matter. So you know, listening to it, it's a pleasant song to listen to. But my dad isn't dead. But I'll just like preface it with that. But it also, my dad's in California, and I don't see him real often. He actually came out with my stepmom and my little sister to visit this summer, and I mean, that's the first time I've seen him in person in I think a couple years. Yeah, a couple years. I went out to California a couple years ago, and my mom had cancer, and it was just good having him here. And like there was one day that we just sat, and I asked him some family type question, and that turned into like me talking to him for a few hours, kind of rehashing his whole history, because there were all these like little tidbits of stuff that I remembered hearing here and there. But like when you hear stuff growing up, you don't remember what you know is the case, or like what was something you heard when you were little and you distorted it in your own mind because you didn't have the understanding for it. So this song kind of just made me think about that, you know. All the things that I miss from being around my family, none of them are huge things. There's all those little things, you know. So that's my recommendation for a song, Yesterday by Atmosphere, off the album When Life Gives You Lemons.
I have to check that out. I know the name, but I don't know if I've heard that. This is kind of off the top of my head, too, but for some reason, two things kind of combined, music-wise and movie-wise. Have you ever seen, I don't know if we've ever talked about it, and I just can't believe I haven't brought it up, the Jim Jarmusch film Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, with Forrest Whitaker in it?
Yeah, I have seen that. It's been a while, but I've seen it.
The soundtrack to that, there's a, and then the music for the film was done by, RZA from Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah.
And he's also in it, and he plays a character named Samurai in Camouflage or something like that. But I that's one of those weird kind of little films that I found a long time ago. It came out like in 99. And, you know, it's heavily influenced by Samurai. You know, you see him, he quotes from the Hagakure, or however you say the name of the book. It's just a really interesting book. He's in there, ends up being, he's a young man that, lives his life as a samurai according to the code and works for the Italian mafia, which is an interesting pairing. And he only communicates with them, his handler, through like pigeons that he raises, for people who haven't seen it. And he ends up on this little quest, to take care of some things. And he also befriends like this little girl in the movie, and it's one of those good ones. And the soundtrack is just the beats. There's a part where he gets a car and he puts a CD in, and it's like the theme song for the theme beat for the movie. And it's just like, man, I really need to get a hold of that. I could listen to that all day long. So that's a kind of a combination suggestion, because the only other thing that we've been watching is my wife and I, we go on these weird little tangents of watching things where there's this weird show called Kids Baking Championship that has Valerie Bertinelli and the cake guy that makes cakes, Duff, can't even remember his last name, bald guy. You've seen him on TV probably, or heard of him maybe at least. And they judge, that's like anywhere from like 10 to 13 year old kids that bake all kinds of stuff. So we've just been binging that and watching them cry when they lose, and I laugh at them and stuff. So that's my two cents for a quick hit on music and viewing suggestions.
You know, it's funny. I was just talking to, like, you bringing up somebody from Wu-Tang doing the soundtrack to a movie. I was talking with somebody I work with about, so Mac Miller just died. I didn't know who he was really until he died. And then I was like, well, I'm somewhat familiar with that name, and I know that's somebody that this person at work listens to, so I'll check them out a little bit. Lyrically, like, I mean, he's not my style of rapper to listen to. Like, the lyrics are pretty, you know, pretty base stuff, you know, drugs and sex. But one of the things that stood out to me about his lyrics is a lot more focus on positivity than about negativity or about, you know, this kind of like dominating, you know, bragging that is, you know, predominant in rap. But the production really caught me. Like, the production was, I thought was something kind of special. And so, as I mentioned to him, that a couple other things that I was surprised by the quality of the production, and the creativity of it, not just the quality of it, because there could be really well produced stuff that I couldn't stand, because just because it's well produced doesn't mean that it's music that I, you know, would care to listen to.
Right.
But, one was Mobb Deep blew me away, the production, especially listening to the song Shook Ones and like listening to it and getting some of the unique qualities of the production on that song. Like the piano in that song is everything is like kind of off kilter by half a measure. So it like really creates a lot of element to the song. But Wu-Tang Clan too, 36 Chambers. The first time I ever listened to that album was I got it because I was going to see them at Rock the Bells on my 21st birthday. So obviously this was some time ago. This was the last time they all performed together before Old Dirty Bastard died too. But I had never listened to them at that time. So I got 36 Chambers. It's still the only Wu-Tang album that I really enjoy. I've tried listening to other stuff some and it's all okay, but like I've never gotten really into anything else like I did into 36 Chambers. But the quality of the production is just, very impressive, the level of creativity involved in it. So I don't know, that just stood out to me with you mentioning RZA doing his soundtrack. It's the creativity of those guys is amazing.
Yeah, there's a podcast I listen to every once in a while when I feel just want to check them out, and they do like they'll go and grab an album, like I think it's the Classic Albums Podcast or something like that. And it's not everything that like this. Sometimes they'll discuss things that like they did one on the Wu-Tang Clan's that album you just mentioned, and the two guys that do the show, that's not necessarily their thing, but they'll bring on like a super fan or somebody that's really into it, and they'll go through it track by track and break down, and they were really heavy on just the amazement at the production values of that album. And that my only experience with Mac Miller was I sometimes listen to a little podcast. It's like almost a daily or weekly. It's a Tiny Desk. It's an NPR podcast, or Tiny Desk Concerts, where basically a musician will show up at the offices of NPR with a band or by themselves and perform one or two songs, two or three. And, that's the first experience I had with him. And it was, you know, similar to what I'd never known about him, never heard about him. And, but I enjoyed the songs and I went and looked up about him. That's how I found out a little bit more about who he was. Didn't realize he was so young. You know, he died at 26, and, you know, it's always sad when somebody dies young, especially because it could have been hell, but
I was listening through a little bit of one of his albums, and one of the songs from the album Good AM, I forget what the song was called, but he has a line in there about not wanting to join the 27 Club, which is a reference to musicians who died at 27, and he didn't. He died at 26, didn't even make it there.
No.
It's always sad, but... Well, I'll take us home. My quick little movie recommendation. I haven't been watching much of anything lately. A little bit of TV here and there, but I don't know, nothing that's really stood out to me a whole lot. Scrolling around Netflix, like we killed Netflix for a while because we had Amazon Prime. We were watching stuff on there. So we just signed back up for Netflix like maybe a month ago. And we've been watching through a few things. But scrolling through, there are some movies that always jump out at me. I'm like, oh, I want to watch that. One of them, and I actually own it on Blu-ray. One of my favorite movies, actually. But every time I see it on there, I want to watch it just because I'm like, oh, it's right there. I want to watch it. Jurassic Park. Absolutely love the movie Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've watched it, but I remember the first one definitely I loved. And
yeah, we can stop right there.
the second one, that's the one.
Yeah, the second one, I think it's been a long time since I've watched anyone but the first one. But the second one, I think, was okay. And then the third one was not very good. And then Jurassic World, I thought, was entertaining, but pretty awful in some ways. It was fun. It was a fun movie, but there were parts where they're just like, seriously? Like, this is so cheesy. And I haven't seen the newest one yet, but the first Jurassic Park movie. Yeah, you can't go wrong with dinosaur movies, though. I mean, I'm never going to complain that they're making more dinosaur movies. But the first Jurassic Park movie, I think, is a great movie. The special effects stand the test of time big time. So many movies that hinge around things that aren't real, you know, there aren't dinosaurs around to act out these parts or anything. They don't stand up over time. You know, like, have you tried watching Arachnophobia? I remember being a kid and that movie being terrifying. And you watch it now, and even, I have an aversion to spiders. That movie doesn't bother me a bit because it's ridiculous. It's really, you know, the effects don't stand up at all. Jurassic Park, the effects stand up. You know, the acting is good. The story is good. Like, it's an all-around great movie. And... You know, like, people talk about it in the regards of it being this, this series of movies. So it's this property that's still going and people enjoy it. So it's still present in that way. But it never gets any attention just as being a, you know, really great movie. You know, like other things would. Like, you know, I don't know, people talk about the old Aliens movies or, you know.
Yeah.
Different movies like that like have some critical respect that I don't think Jurassic Park gets the respect it deserves. It's always been one of my favorite movies, and whenever people ask, you know, what your favorite movie is, like, that one and The Royal Tenenbaums, my two favorite movies that hasn't changed for years.
Yeah, two good picks there. Yeah, let's see, that's something I remember loving that movie so much that I actually read the book by Michael Crichton. And the book was really good.
Yeah, I read that book as a kid in between the first time I saw the movie and the second time I saw the movie. And I remember that specifically because the second time I saw the movie, I was expecting scenes that didn't exist in the movie because I had read the book in between. So, like, I just created them in my mind. I will add a caveat to what I just said about my favorite movies. Like, I feel like, saying what's your favorite movie is just like saying who's the greatest basketball player of all time. Like, there's always going to be caveats to the argument. So for me, like, when you say your favorite movie, there's going to be different kinds of favorites for you, you know, the things that suit different things. So I'll also throw in Seven Samurai, because that was the movie that just made me absolutely fall in love with samurai movies, with Mifune as an actor. It was, I think, the second Kurosawa movie I watched, but, you know, his movies. And since then I've been able to, like, I've always had a difficulty getting into old movies, but watching that definitely just, like, you know, kicked open the door of watching old classic movies like that, at least, you know, samurai movies for me. So that is all I have to say.
So the things that stand the test of time, it's like, Dave and I were talking about the other day about, like, I rewatched The Lord of the Rings last week. And I was like, man, there are some things. It's only 15 years old, I guess, or thereabouts. And, I mean, there were some special effects in there that don't really hold up that well. I mean, some of it is still really good.
I was kind of surprised by that. That really, and the Harry Potter movies, too. There's some special effects that, like, they look great, but now with a little bit of time pass, they look a little bit cartoony and cheesy.
It's kind of crazy how quickly this technology advances, and how quickly it can make something that just like a year ago or 2 years ago, rewatching it wouldn't have been an issue. But yeah, we have that experience with watching stuff with my oldest daughter, and she's like, "This just looks silly." And I'm like, "Well, to me, it's not, because, you know, I can still remember being a kid watching it and loving it." But yeah, you separate yourself from that, even kind of have a hard time watching things, but still appreciate them. But, and the other thing about things that are just like favorites, picking out your favorite movies, Dave and I talked about, like, there's these things I call perfect songs. Like, I hear a song, and, you know, to somebody else it might just be a song, but to me it's like that perfect song, because to me nothing can be added to it to make it better, or you take anything one part away from it, it would ruin it. But the way people can create things, and there are things, to me, there are perfect movies. I would say Seven Samurai is also for me one of those perfect movies for me. Not say it's the best movie, or some people would say, oh, it's not that good. That's fine, but for me, it's a perfect movie. Royal Tenenbaums, yes, is a perfect movie.
Yeah, you know, and I think that, like, with those, because, like, the Seven Samurai, the one whole, like, Kippoken Seven Samurai is, it's like 4 hours long. So it's, like, how often can you sit down and watch the whole thing? But what makes it, like, still perfect, I can sit down and watch half an hour of it. It doesn't even matter what half hour of it, and I'm going to enjoy it just as much as if I sat down and watched the whole thing. Yeah, I think that's where, you know, like, any of those things that I'm right with you on that, like, a perfect song can be the song that, like, it comes up in your playlist and it's great, or you can hit repeat on it and literally listen to it for half an hour over and over and get the same enjoyment out of it for half an hour. You know, Royal Tenenbaums, I could pop that movie on at any part and just, like, settle into that good feeling I get watching that movie.
Yeah, those are those little treasures that, when it, like, if you're flipping through the TV, like some people, it's Shawshank. If Shawshank is on TV and you're flipping through, a lot of people I've talked with, it's like, well, I got to sit down here and I have to watch it now. They just have to finish it because they love it so much. And, you know, my wife and I are kind of like that when we see it, or a couple of other things. If they're on TV, we're going to watch it regardless if we've seen it 100 times or not, because it's just that good.
I think that the one element that, like, flips the switch on whether something can be that perfect something or not is there a part of it that is tedious to go back through, even if it's worth going back through it to watch the movie, listen to the song, read the book, whatever. If it has that part that you're just like, I just want to get through this to get on to the good part, it's not that. It's not perfect. Like, it has to be something that every bit of it can be consumed on its own and have the same level of enjoyment. You know, like, I watched Royal Tenenbaums, literally every part of that movie is enjoyable to watch. There isn't one bit of it that isn't enjoyable to watch to me. Whereas Jurassic Park, I would say that some of the stuff in the beginning might be a little tedious to see over and over. You know, you get past that because you know how good it's going to be after that. But, and even then, Jurassic Park, I might be able to argue that it's perfect for me. But, and it's also all going to be depending on you. Like, your perfect thing is not a perfect thing, it's, you know, your perfect thing.
Yeah. I mean, just coming to something that just comes to mind for me that I consider a perfect thing for me is Bonnie Prince Billy's album that he did with Matt Sweeney called Super Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's an album I can have on repeat all day long and never get tired of it. And one song on it in particular that is a perfect song for me is the song Blood Embrace that's on there. When I first discovered Bonnie Prince Billy, especially that album, that song, I can do, like you just said, hit it on it's a 7-minute and 57-second song, and I can listen to it for hours and not get tired of it. Now, I might drive my wife crazy if I played it over and over like that, but to me, it's just one of those, it's just timeless. And it's really cool having those kind of things that you can fall back on sometimes.
I agree. All right, let's wrap this sucker up. Let's
wrap it up, surprise episode.
Another episode down the drain. I guess that's not the right way to say that, but another episode in the books. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Who's Paul. You are at MD Sparkman. We are also at Occasionally STW on Twitter for the show. You can go to nerdylegion.com to find all the other wonderful Nerdy Legion podcasts that we mentioned, some of the proprietors of, like Martin in his comic talk today, where he apparently spoiled Bordertown. Good job, Martin. Way to ruin it. so that's where you can find us on Twitter, online, and that's pretty much it. So you heard Brafer Roberts last week. Next week you'll hear another special guest, Alex Casa. I don't know. He didn't correct me. I asked him how to say his name, and he just said, that's fine.
Last week you heard Alex.
What?
Casa. Alex. Because we're going to be really... Alex is coming out.
I can't start this. It was Rafer, and then it was Arla. We're getting stockpiled on an episode, folks. So, yeah. So, last week you heard Alex. A couple weeks before that, you heard Rafer. If there's anybody that you would like either of us to try to hook up with and have a conversation with, let us know on Twitter, and we'll try to. Hopefully, I will be recording with J.K. Woodward in the near future. So, if that works out, that'll probably be coming up next week after you listen to this. But yeah, so until next time, check out what we talked about. Tell us what you're reading, watching, listening to, and...
Yeah, give us recommendations for all of the above. I mean, I'm happy to check out any kind of music or comic book or any piece of whatever. Give us some suggestions that we can check out cheaply.
All right. To all, have a good night.
Good night.
wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boo.
Nerdy Legion.
NerdyLegion.com.